I'm Mike Mason with a check of the local news on KDLG. The Board of Directors for the Bristol Bay Native Corporation have voted to oppose Ballot Measure 2 to legalize the use and sale of marijuana in Alaska for anyone over the age of 21. The board voted on the matter on October 3rd. In a written statement, the board claims they considered the possible impacts of legalizing marijuana on the communities and the youth in Bay. They claim that a recent study in the New England Journal of Medicine shows a correlation between marijuana use and altered brain development, higher unemployment, and greater dependency on social services. Board Chairman Joe Chythlik is quoted as saying that opposing Ballot Measure 2 is in the best interest of the corporation's shareholders and the communities of Bristol Bay. BBNC refused to make Chythlik or BBNC CEO Jason Natrokin available for an interview to explain the decision-making process of the board in opposing Ballot Measure 2 and why the corporation is taking its opposition to the ballot measure public. Alaska Governor Sean Parnell is trying to get more Alaska students ready for the workforce with specialized skills or crafts that suit Alaska's economy. KDLG's Thea Card has more on the plan.
The Alaska's Career Ready Education Initiative is intended to prepare students for Alaska's growing economy and the types of jobs being created. Governor Parnell introduced his initiative in Fairbanks at the Alaska Superintendents Association. He says Alaska is on the cusp of an economic boom.
We don't want to start off with a bunch of new people coming from outside to take these good jobs. We want to train our young people to take them as well. Within 8 years, Alaska is projected to gain more than 36,000 jobs, and this was before the new boom, these estimates. And we also need an additional 95,000 people to replace the workers who are going to be retiring in these industries.
Earlier this year, Parnell signed the Alaska's Educational Opportunity Act into law, which is intended to provide opportunities in career and technical training, charter schools, residential schools, and correspondence schools. Parnell also created the Alaska Performance Scholarship to encourage high school students to take harder classes, and Digital Teaching Initiative, which makes real-time video conference learning available to students. All of this is part of Parnell's attempt to bring more vocational training opportunities to Alaska students.
4 out of 5 of the new jobs in Alaska are going to require that kind of certification. And anybody from any place in this state can take advantage of the skilled labor jobs that are coming.
He says that dual education is the future of Alaska's economy.
What if we together establish a path where a young person, in a much bigger way than we've ever done before, could get both, it's that dual thinking, dual high school diploma and skill certification, so they can leave high school and go right into the workplace. What if they could graduate from high school and have their associate's degree when they come out of high school?
The Alaska's Career Ready Education Initiative is a statewide program with the help from the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development and the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
Last month, South Central Alaska experienced an earthquake that measured 6.2 on the Richter scale. Although there wasn't any significant damage because of the quake, the state of Alaska is promoting a program it says will keep residents safe during an earthquake. Coming up on October the 16th at 10:16 in the morning, residents are encouraged to participate in the Great Alaska Shakeout. The state is hoping that individuals will take time all across the state to practice the drop, cover, and hold on as a reaction drill. In March, as part of the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Great Alaskan Earthquake, a shakeout was conducted with more than 100,000 participants. The Public Information Officer for the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management is Jeremy Zedek.
What we saw during the recent 6.2 earthquake here in South Central is that folks that regularly practice drop, cover, and hold, like schools and other large organizations, when that shaking began, they knew exactly what to do. And we heard a lot of reports that folks that don't practice it on a regular basis, that there is a bit of confusion about what they should actually do.
The Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, Alaska Earthquake Information Center, the U.S. Geological Survey, and FEMA are among those promoting drop, cover, and hold on. Zedek says the concept is simple and could be life-saving.
Drop down to the ground before the shaking drops you. Find some type of cover that can cover you up, and then hold on to that until the shaking stops.
Alaska is definitely earthquake country. According to the Alaska Earthquake Information Center, the state had about 24,000 earthquakes each year, actually, accounting for 11% of all of the world's earthquakes. However, Zedek says people are still uninformed of the dangers. He says falling objects, everything from light fixtures to bookcases, are the biggest cause of death during an earthquake.
We see injuries from falling objects. So dropping to the ground is a good course of action, because the shaking sometimes can throw people to the ground. And if you try to exit a building, you're walking downstairs, and you're thrown to the ground, you can tumble down some stairs and there's injuries there. Also, we don't want there to be a mad rush for the door when there is shaking, because an unorganized evacuation can cause injuries as well.
Zedek says residents can take some simple steps, like hanging pictures with something more sustainable than just a nail and a cord. He says it may seem of little consequence, but if a picture frame drops and breaks, shattered glass poses a threat. The October shakeout already has 74,000 registered, and Zedek is hoping that they can beat last March's record. For more information on the program and registration, you can go to shakeout.org/Alaska or follow the progress on Twitter by searching #AKShake. Monday marked the first day that Alaskans could apply to stake a remote recreational cabin site in southwest and interior Alaska. KDLG's Thea Card has some details.
The Alaska Department of Natural Resources is offering lands for sale, including some around Snake Lake, 20 miles northwest of Dillingham. Natural Resources Specialist with the DNR's Land Sales Section, Peter Burton, says the state runs the recreational cabin site program that allows residents to stake their own parcels of land.
We put out the brochure. The next step is we get applications in from people who are interested. We do a drawing to see who we award the authorizations to, because we want to keep the feel of these areas remote, so we limit the number of people we send out to each area. For Snake Lake, it's 50 authorizations will be the cap.
Burton says after the 50 authorizations are chosen, the winners will be able to go out to the area and stake out a 5 to 20 acre parcel. The state will then survey and appraise the parcels, and the residents will be able to purchase the land. State lands are sold to the public like this after public review processes and careful consideration of the plans for the area. Burton says the state then determines if the land should remain preserved or find a different purpose.
Land that is designated as settlement or remote settlement is what will typically be using for our program. So it went through that process. It's designated as appropriate for settlement, and this is one of the Department of Natural Resources ways that they get the land out into people's hands.
Applications will be accepted through November 25th. It's $25 to enter the lottery. It's open to any Alaskan resident 18 years or older. The authorizations for Snake Lake will be chosen on December 11th. The brochure can be found at the Department of Natural Resources website at www.dnr.alaska.gov. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
St. Mary's troopers responded to a fatal ATV crash in Marshall on Wednesday. The woman killed is the survivor of a plane crash in 2013. An investigation found that 26-year-old Melanie Coffey of Marshall died after hitting a tree on the old airport road just outside of town. Megan Peters is a spokesperson for the Alaska State Troopers.
It is believed that it was at a high rate of speed, and she went airborne and then hit a tree. She was found the next day by villagers, who then called troopers, and we responded out there to do the on-scene investigation.
Coffey was one of six survivors of a plane crash near St. Mary's in November of 2013 that killed four people. The Association of Village Council Presidents honored Coffey posthumously at their convention in Bethel Thursday, where Vivian Corthius with the Alaska with AVCP presented members of her tribe with a special award for her bravery.
Melanie Coffey, despite being injured herself, walked through the snow and tangles of brush to reach the road and direct the first responders to the crash victims during the crash of a Cessna 208 near St. Mary's in November 2013.
ABCP convention attendees also took a moment of silence to remember Coffey. The next of kin has been notified. Troopers say foul play is not suspected and that alcohol was involved. Coffey's body has been sent to the state medical examiner's office in Anchorage for an autopsy. Alaska Governor Sean Parnell was presented with the Alaska Travel Industry Association Award on Tuesday in Fairbanks. KDLG's Thea Card reports.
ATIA is a group based in Anchorage that aims to promote Alaska as a top visitor destination, communicating and promoting the Alaska tourism industry as one of the state's major economic forces. Board member John Binkley spoke at the Alaska Travel Industry Association Convention and Trade Show. He presented the governor with the award.
To recognize him for the care that he has about Alaskans who are employed in this industry. Whether it's the retiree that's on a fixed income that works as a summer tour guide to build a little extra income, whether it's a taxi cab driver who works at a second job to try and support their families, or a student who works all summer in the tourism business to help pay their way through college. Those are the people that Governor Sean Parnell cares about. Those are the people that Governor Sean Parnell fights for, and that's why we're here to give him that award.
Parnell has made the Alaskan tourism industry a pet project of his. Applications for new tourism-related business licenses and license renewals increased from 19 in 2009 to 144 in 2013. Binkley attributes the success seen in the travel industry to Parnell's pro-business tax regime. The biggest attraction to Alaska, Parnell says, isn't necessarily the landscape or the people, but rather the experience.
So I thank you, not just for sharing those wonderful mountains and beautiful northern lights, but I thank you for creating something inside each person who comes to this state, something very special.
Parnell says the tourism industry accounts for 46,000 jobs in Alaska. He says those jobs are what fuels the state economy as well as individuals.
More than $100 million contributed to the state of Alaska's coffers, plus $79 million in local taxes. Huge impact. You also know we've recovered as an industry. For summer 2013 through the fall winter 2014, our numbers show over 1.9 million visitors statewide. That's through April of 2014. That's an all-time high.
Parnell says the Alaska travel industry can count on him to continue to stand with them. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
The Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development recently published a new report outlining the trends in about 200 industry and occupations in Alaska. The report was released earlier this month. Alaska is projected to gain over 36,000 jobs between 2012 and 2022. Economist with the Alaska Department of Labor, Paul Martz, says the 10-year report comes out every couple of years.
So the next one will be in 2016, and it will be from 2014 to 2024.
The report looked at two industries in particular, healthcare and mining. Alaska's population is expected to grow 10% between 2012 and 2022. In that time span, Alaskans age 65 and older will increase by 79%. Martz says that increase in older Alaskans is the main reason behind the potential rise in healthcare jobs in the state.
You know, that's going to drive a lot of demand for healthcare, and not necessarily hospital settings, but also in-home care and things like that, which gets more into the personal care services.
The report notes that hospital employment is estimated to grow by about 20%. Ambulatory health care, such as physicians' offices, outpatient care centers, and home health care services, is expected to grow by 28.5%. As far as mining, Martz makes it clear that it does not include oil and gas, just mineral mining. It's projected to increase by 24.8% between 2012 to 2022.
A lot of that has to do with, so we use statistical procedures to exploit relationships with the data, you know, past data, and we also use predictor variables that go along, so things like price and mineral production. So we take the historic values and sort of mine those for their relationships and then use that to project forward. So we've seen, you know, pretty high mineral prices relatively over the past few years. And we expect that, you know, it obviously spiked up, and, you know, it's going to level off, but that's still higher.
Metal ore mining jobs more than doubled between 2001 and 2013. The report notes an upward trend that will continue with growth in existing mines and the continuation of work towards some prospective mines. However, the report looked at 187 other industries, according to Martz.
These in the table in the article are sort of sector level. So there are a lot of industries within these. So within support activities for mining, we have, you know, drilling, oil and gas wells. That's a separate industry, and they're all rolled up into these broad categories.
Mart says there have been decreases in employment in federal and local government jobs. Federal government eliminated jobs in Alaska since 2011 with a decrease of 588 in 2012 and an additional loss of 833 in 2013. Between the vast expanses on land, extreme weather, and mountainous terrains, Alaska pilots are often disconnected from vital navigation aids and communication. NASA delivered some new technology to Alaska recently that could help pilots flying over the vast wilderness. KDLG's Thea Card has more.
The technology is satellite-based communication method where regional data is sent only to that specific region. The concepts and data are available as an open-source project for further development. Manager of Next-Gen Concepts and Technology Development, Dr. Palimar Kopidekar, says with many Alaskan communities only accessible by airplane, flight technologies are vital to safety.
There have been a lot of accidents and incidents in Alaska because of the airspace, the complexity of the mountain passes, and bad weather situations.
This next-gen technology is part of the Terrain and Atmospheric Information for General Aviation program. Kopidekar says the system is not perfected yet. He says NASA did not give Alaska the entire next-gen system, but rather developed prototype aspects for the state. The iPad application that allows the viewer to see the location of the aircraft and where it's going, as well as satellite weather information, is included in the next-gen package the state was granted. Another technology included is in the Regional Data Communication Program.
So it's important to target the airspace and operations and the vehicles that, or aircraft that are in that airspace, and only provide it to those aircraft, not to the whole state, because it's too expensive to send information to every place.
The project is a result of a joint effort between the NASA Ames Research Center and the state of Alaska. The next step in the development of the TAIGA concept is for the state of Alaska to take the NASA concept and develop it into an app that meets the specific needs of Alaskan pilots. In Dillingham, I'm Thea Card.
Writer Catherine Rue was born and raised in Juneau. She used her childhood as fodder for a recently published book for middle school readers. Braving the Brontes is the first in a series that introduces Carly Keene, literary detective, a Juneau girl whose adventurous spirit allows her to brave time, travel, ghosts, and Victorian England. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
Any Southeast Alaskan who picks up Braving the Brontes will notice what footwear the protagonist is wearing on the cover. Extra Tufts. Catherine Rue made sure the book's New York illustrator had an idea of where 12-year-old Carly Keene is from.
I sent him a picture of my Extra Tufts, and then I sent him a picture of a tent set up in the marsh in Alaska. Here's the kind of mountains I'm talking about. Here's what the water and the mountains and islands look like together. And just so you know, people from Juneau don't use umbrellas. We all make fun of them. You know, she needs a raincoat on the front, or, you know, that kind of thing.
The book begins and ends in present-day Juneau. It takes an interesting turn when Carly is walking downtown with her best friend, Francesca.
They go into a bookshop they've never seen, down a little alleyway they've never seen when they're walking home from getting hot cocoa downtown. And she's reading the first edition of Jane Eyre and falls asleep and wakes up in 1846.
Carly finds herself in the home of the Bronte sisters in England as Charlotte Bronte is trying to write the classic Jane Eyre. Carly is stuck there until she can solve a mystery involving the family. Rue mirrored the fictional Carly after herself as a young girl, someone who read a lot of books, spent a lot of time outdoors, and romanticized the past. She says it was important to have Carly be an adventurous, independent Alaskan girl.
Challenges that Carly faces are things that she feels better prepared to deal with because she is Alaskan, like how they approach situations, like a chamber pot.
Braving the Brontes is geared for kids ages 9 to 13. Rue warns there is some challenging vocabulary that parents may need to decipher. The book also references many other great works of literature besides those written by the Bronte sisters, but Rue doesn't expect her readers to have read Jane Eyre or to know who the Bronte sisters are.
The goal with this was to sort of say, hey, you've probably read Anne of Green Gables or the Narnia books, Harry Potter, and you're looking for something else to read. Here's what's coming up, and it's really fun. Sort of introduce readers to the possibilities that they're going to get to in a few years.
In the next book of the series, Carly and best friend Francesca find themselves in 1862 during the Civil War Battle of Fredericksburg, where Louisa May Alcott is a nurse. Writing the series allows Rue to explore a childhood fantasy. She was always waiting for her turn to walk through the wardrobe into Narnia. She says she's still waiting. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Many of the stories you hear during the KDLG local news can be found online at kdlg.org. You can also find contact information on that website if you would like to provide a comment, correction, or a news tip. That's a check of the local news on listener-supported public radio KDLG. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason, reporting.